You might get like. Good afternoon, or oh golly, I guess it's good night, everybody.
Over already. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the Joint Committee on Health Insurance Transition. I'd like to open, and welcome, I would like to open an organizational meeting for the purpose of adoption of committee bills. Representative Greenland?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated 2/4/15.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? So ordered. All right. I will close the organizational meeting and open an informational meeting, and we're going to start with an overview of LC 1203, which will become Senate Bill 1, and we'll be addressing the Dash 1 amendments and their committee on OLIS for you to refer to, because we're trying to go paperless. And so we're going to start out with, are we going to start out with Lori first and then Pat? Or are we going to, Lori, you're going to go over as the Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. Please go over the Dash 1 amendments, which are a gut and stuff.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Lori Freeman from Legislative Council. And yes, it is indeed a gut and stuff. So for everybody's reading pleasure, they only have to go through a bunch of inserts and deletes. Well, I see I have a group of veterans here, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here. I know you've all studied it, too, and you probably know it better than me at this point. But
I want to know if abolishment is a word.
If what?
Abolishment is a word.
Well, it must be, or our editors wouldn't let it go through. So, obviously what this does is it gets rid of Cover Oregon as a public corporation, and it transfers all those functions over to the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It's pretty much a straight transfer over. The only really new things that crop up out of this are that before we had one exchange for both the individual and employer groups. This makes it more clear that those are two separate functions and could be operated separately rather than that they have to all go through one portal. The other thing is the corporation has separate bank accounts. They don't have a treasury fund. And so this creates a fund in the treasury and transfers their money into the treasury fund. And then it also creates a new Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Committee. There were some advisory committees in the old one, but this is sort of a new permutation with different membership. But other than that, what it does is on the date of passage, which it has an emergency clause, all the powers, rights, obligations, liabilities, including under any legal proceedings or contracts, get transferred from Cover Oregon to Department of Consumer and Business Services, and the board of directors and the executive director, their tenure ceases. At this point, however, there's our standard boilerplate that allows the director to take any actions that he needs to take before the corporation is actually abolished on June 30th. So during this is intended to be a transition period for the director to be able to staff up and, you know, be ready to take over on June 30th. So in Section 2, we have all these powers and rights and everything being transferred, but the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange Corporation retains its functions, its duties and functions, and those are transferred It's abolished and it's transferred on June 30th under Section 2. I don't know how much detail you really want me to go into.
What I would like is, since we've already gone through this, the last meeting, I really would like the changes that were to address the changes.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't get you ahead of.
Well, I wasn't ready for that question.
I'm sorry, Gloria. I should have.
I can give you your written changes right here.
I think Pat will be able to address
some list
changes.
Of them as well. Yeah.
Do you want to?
I can go back to my office and grab it, and then
we
I
have a copy
it.
Of the memo.
I can give it to you.
That was posted on OLIS, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure I have it, but yeah.
You've read it too many times. Just don't.
Okay. Well, this isn't going to help because this just tells the things that I didn't do that they wanted me to do the way they did it. But I did a lot more things that aren't encompassed in this memo. So if you can give me 3 minutes to walk back to my office, I can actually come back and go over specifically what those changes
were. Pat has
No, I think Pat has a list, so just give us the overview.
Okay. Any other questions?
Question left.
Senator Bates.
And you may have covered in the last session, I wasn't able to be here, but one of the issues involved in this is using the technology of the federal exchange and still running through our exchange so that we still qualify depending on what that court decides to do with this. Is that discussed in this bill at this point?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Bates, what it does is it transfers sort of wholesale all of the functions of our state-based exchange to DCBS, but it has a section that authorizes DCBS to contract with the federal government for any of the functions. So in other words, the ultimate authority for the exchange remains with DCBS, but they can contract with the federal government to run the IT part of it.
Follow up. In your legal opinion, does this allow us, no matter what the court decides, and maybe the Supreme Court decides this, to continue to have a state exchange using the federal technology?
Senator Bates, it's really hard to guess what the Supreme Court's going to do. If they stay within the confines of the case that's before them, which isn't an exchange version that we have, we're fine. I don't know if they're going to go beyond those parameters, but I really feel that the way it's been structured and way we've worked with the federal government, we should have an extremely good chance to argue that this is still a state-based exchange and it's not a federally facilitated exchange.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
We have a quiet group tonight. One advantage
late.
Of having a late evening.
Late.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
In the discussion of the original version, we were pretty clear that there were no significant policy changes that were made in that version. Is there anything in the dash one that you would consider a policy change that we want to call out other than just things that facilitate the transfer of Cover Oregon to DCBS?
Mr. Co-Chair, no, there's no significant policy changes. Most of it's just sort of tweaking what we had in the original bill and making and bringing some more clarity to some provisions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, let me clarify that. Mr. Co-Chair, the difference is in the original Senate Bill 1, the the duties and functions and powers of the board of directors ended on passage. And at that point, they were transferred to the director of DCBS, who just stepped into the shoes, basically, of the board. But the corporation itself sort of remained intact until June 30th. What this does is it changes that so that basically all the duty sanctions, powers, liabilities, and what have you get transferred. So all you have are the people, the employees, basically working at the insurance exchange, but they're all under the supervision now of DCBS rather than, retaining sort of a separate status. I know that's clear as mud.
May I follow up? That's very clear.
Oh,
good. Those employees' status must change when that happens, right? I mean, do they become state employees at that point?
Mr. Chair, there's a special provision that says they're not subject to the transfer provisions that require, state employees to have sort of bumping rights. So once the exchange is abolished, they don't have any rights to be employed, but that, of course, would not preclude the director of DCBS from hiring any of them.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to follow up on your last comment to make sure, because we were looking for clarity for this. I believe under existing state law, if those critical employees that magically lose their shoes and they're no longer employed with Cover Oregon, there are, and I believe you've had this discussion with DCBS, there are in place existing laws and within here that would then allow them, for those critical employees that we need to have 20 seconds after they lost their pair of shoes, as was mentioned here, that they can be employed at least temporarily in Oregon to ensure we don't lose the expertise, especially in the 1095 categories, tax categories, and those particular areas. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, Senator Boquist, this has it has a provision saying that the director can take any steps he wants upon passage. So the director wouldn't even have to wait until the corporation is formally abolished. He could go ahead and hire whoever he wanted the day after the bill passes.
Thank you so much, Lori. With that, I'd like to call to the podium Pat Owen.
You might check on abolishment as opposed to abolition.
Thanks, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Allen. I'm the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. What I can do this evening is give you my understanding of the significant changes of the Dash Ones from the base bill. There were about 15 or 16 things that we asked for in some degree of specificity of Ledge Council to accomplish a variety of things that I'll go into, and either those were done in the ways that we suggested or were accomplished in relatively equivalent ways. One of them had to do with the effective date of the ability to substitute DCBS in for Cover Oregon in litigation, and that led to sort of a cascading set of when pieces were effective that is somewhat confusing, and I think it's some of what you've been talking about here. Unless you want me to, I don't know that I need to go through all 15 of the changes that I'm currently tracking in the bill, but I will say that there are a handful that are really technical cleanup sorts of changes. For instance, at the last hearing, the industry expressed concern that there was subpoena power that tracked particularly to Cover Oregon. It's duplicative with subpoena power that already exists under my authority as director of DCBS, and so there's a change in the Dash Ones to remove that duplicative subpoena power. In the original Senate Bill 99, there was language that envisioned the employees of Cover Oregon as being covered under insurance policies that were health insurance plans that were acquired for Cover Oregon, and it authorized innovative products and services. Well, now that we'll be doing this as a function of the department, employees of the department are covered by PEB, the need for that language goes away. There are a handful of those kinds of changes. There are about six changes in the bill that are at the recommendation of the Department of Justice that really are aimed at being extraordinarily clear in Oregon statute that this is a state-based exchange. Our position, of course, would be that this is a state-based exchange. It has always been a state-based exchange. It is a state-based exchange today, irrespective of its use of federal technology. These improvements to the language really are intended to help the reader clearly understand that regardless of what happens in the King versus Burwell case, Oregon state law clearly articulates this as a state-based exchange, and that's about a third of the changes that we asked for. The most significant change, I think, comes from a discussion that you'll remember, I think, from the last couple of times that you've discussed this bill around a firewall between the department's insurance regulatory functions and these exchange functions. I think at the outset I've said that that was a separation that I was interested in having to make sure that there weren't conflicts as we administered that. Industry expressed concern about that. The original bill as drafted had a very, very strict firewall. I think the language was something to the effect that no employee involved in regulating insurance could be involved in the exchange, and I was concerned that that was going to be very difficult to effectively manage without setting up a lot of parallel structures. The language that you'll find in the bill now basically points to decision-making and management. So if you are responsible, other than me as the director over all the functions, if you're responsible for managing and making decisions about insurance regulation, you won't be involved in managing or making decisions about exchange functions. That gets us out of worries about, do I need to have different network administrators? Can I have a policy analyst who's an expert on the Affordable Care Act doing a policy document for the insurance division that's a similar document for the exchange? Those kinds of things go away with that language. So that's sort of a quick rundown of what I think are the key differences in the bill. And again, I can go individual by individual if you'd like. A couple of other things to observe about the bill. I've had a number of questions about, particularly as we pursue the small business shop issue, what keeps me from running off and doing a big IT project, other than common sense, I guess. And it's basically this: the fiscal impact statement that you'll consider on this bill next week, when you presumably move it, is going to have a budget that is a program operation budget and doesn't have a line item for any sort of significant development of software. To be able to go do a software development project, should I get it in my mind that that's a good idea, or even a significant contracting relationship with another provider of an existing shop or anything like that, would require me to go back to the Ways and Means Committee and get expenditure limitation, would require probably some position authority, things that aren't built into this this bill. The capacity to do that simply isn't here. And certainly one of the things you might want to consider is whether you think it's useful to have a budget note as a part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services budget that provide some kind of a trigger that if we go over some de minimis threshold of IT expenditure in this function, then we need to come back to Ways and Means and have a conversation about that. That would certainly be a feasible way to deal with that. Ms. Freeman talked about creating a fund and banking. I think from conversations with her, we're okay, but I do want to highlight there was some concern expressed to me late today about what happens to the bank accounts at Cover Oregon and when, the idea being that they need to continue through June 30th because the organization itself will continue through June 30th. I think we're okay on that, but I want to just let you know that concern was raised, and we'll get that resolved before anything moves on the bill. In terms of fiscal impact, we'll be able to go into you'll get a fiscal report in time for Monday, and that'll have significant detail. I would just like to give you kind of a rough idea of where we think the fiscal impact on this bill is as we sit today, and there are really three categories of work, much like the three categories of work I talked to you about before in terms of 2014, 2015, and going on. We think the ongoing program management work is about 15 full-time staff to accomplish that function. We think there is IT transition work as we move from Cover Oregon as an individual organization and fold its functions into DC. CCBS that's a limited duration piece of work that's about a half a dozen people for about a year, and then those positions go away. There's also a service center or call center that's staffed by about a dozen people with a manager as well. And while we go through the tax while we go through the tax season and deal with tax credit issues and questions and those sorts of things, that function will need to continue pretty much part and parcel as it is now, but will be reduced over time. We don't have a great handle on reduced to what yet. And so that's a piece of work that's in addition to the 15, but will be smaller as we go forward into the future. The last thing to talk about, Senator Boqvist has raised questions about the status of tax credits or the impact of a change in the status of tax credits should the King versus Burwell case be decided such that states that don't operate their own exchange, which we are not, lose that tax credit status. Cover Oregon has calculated that this year it's issued $116 million in tax credits. We took that number and basically inflated it over time to match the growth in enrollment that we anticipate and that we use used to do our own financial projections. And if you run that out to 2019, the dollar amount that would be at risk if we were to make a different decision, if we were to decide as a state to throw up our hands and send this back to the feds, would be something on the order of $988 million over the time between now and 2019. So it's a significant tax hit to make a different policy choice around what to do to resolve the exchange issue. With that, that's all that I really intended to cover in terms of what's here, but I'd be happy to answer questions you might have.
Senator Boqvist.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I mean, thank you very much, Mr. Allen. And I just want to point out, and correct me if I'm wrong, counsel over there, I did have put into the record and put up on OLS through the co-chairs a letter documenting, and I think Senator Bates alluded to this earlier here, I mean, there's a $116 million estimate of tax credits right now in 2014, you know, and preserving that access to those tax credits is pretty critical, and how you do the verbiage of the exchange, so on and so forth like that. And, you know, I think we need to, whatever we do, or regardless we do, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, then we need to pay attention to this lawsuit to make sure whatever happens in the future or tweaking that, you know, it stays a state exchange, because I mean it is a de facto tax increase if it were to go the wrong way. And you know, I don't think anybody here wants to be voting for a $116 million, you know, mistake again. So, and again, it is in the record on all this, is it not?
It is, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes. Yes, Senator Bates.
You have a rough idea of how many people have signed up now for the next year to the exchange. Do you have any idea what the cost of premium is going to be, what percentage of premium is going to go to running the exchange?
Co-Chair, Senator Bates, if I understand the question, are you talking about the assessment rate?
Yes.
Yeah, so Cover Oregon is beginning the process of establishing the assessment rate for this coming year. All of our projections have been based on the assessment rate remaining the same that it is currently. And what we've done is try to assure ourselves that the program is sustainable at that assessment rate, which is within the maximum rate allowed under current statute, and we don't anticipate a change to that.
Second question.
Go ahead.
A different question. We set up several pools of risk pools, basically, for insurers entering into the exchange. They run for about 3 years, if I remember correctly. Where are we as far as those pools are concerned? Have they been necessarily be used? Are they still there? What's the status of those? And how does this bill affect those, if at all?
Yeah, so Co-Chair Senator Bates, the bill doesn't affect the pools. And I am not an expert at all in the details. I would say a couple of things about the pools. However, we're about to reach the third year of the pools, and so you know this is the place where you'll see the impact of those begin to fade. phase out, and that will likely have some impact on rates. I think we've expected that since inception. There's a federal issue that has complicated the pools, having to do with the willingness of Congress to make budget adjustments and interpretations that allow those pools to be paid timely. It's a reasonably complicated issue, but it's got some cash flow implications depending on the particular carrier's circumstances and the extent of its use of the pools. And I would be happy to come back and have someone who can talk in much more detail about that, either individually with you or with the committee.
I'm trying to individually. I don't want to take the time of the committee up. It's something that we have to deal with in Ways and Means potentially. I just like to make sure we're on solid ground.
Be happy to do that.
As much as we can in this situation.
I do have one follow-up.
Yes,
Madam Kutcher, just as a follow-up, Senator Bates raised the Ways and Means issue. Could you just reiterate, Pat, for us? I mean, I know the per member per month administrative charge is going to be built into your Ways and Means budget, and along with any future IT would have to go through Ways and Means. Could you just review for the record, you know, how you see, since this is going to be a brand new project for you, how you see your interface with Ways and Means once the new bill is passed here?
Certainly, Co-Chair Senator Boquist, I see this basically functioning like any other program does within the agency, so that we have an ongoing regular relationship with the Ways and Means Committee. We report multiply on a variety of functions. I think this bill calls for significant periodic reporting that we'll do with the committee. The basic relationship, though, is regardless of what revenue we generate through a particular per member per month assessment, we've also got to have expenditure limitation to be able to spend that revenue, and we've got to have position authority for the people who would do the work. And so, you know, what typically happens is if revenue starts increasing, there's not really in an other funds agency a significant motivation to go off and do that, because you don't get to just spend the money. You have to come back and have a legislative conversation about how are you going to spend the money and get the limitation to be able to do that. Is that what you were looking for?
Exactly. We all know the answer. You know the answer, but we want to know the record.
Got it.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Allen.
Thank you.
The last speaker invited is Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Officer, to talk about the fiscal status.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I think Mr. Allen just covered it pretty good.
So.
I tend to agree with him. Basically, we are working on the fiscal. We've been going back and forth getting information from the affected agencies, so we're working on that. We will have something for you at your next meeting. We know that DCBS will need some position authority. We know that there will be a revenue transfer from Cover Oregon to DCBS. At this time, we also know that there's no general fund or lottery funds included in this request. It's all other funds, and the transfer of some federal dollars, I think, that are left in the Cover Oregon fund. So basically, we're just working on them with that. We've talked with DCBS about the opportunity of using a budget note to give them some direction. We would anticipate putting that into their regular budget bill that will come up in Ways and Means later in the process. That's where we're at right now.
Since I'm not a Ways and Means person, explain what you meant by the budget note. For what does that mean for what?
Well, I think there was, Madam Chair, I think there was some discussions about having some direction to DCBS if they have increases in expenditure needs, that we have a regular process that we go through, and the idea was that they could come back to the even year session in February of 2016 if they needed, or they can come to a future emergency board meeting, because the emergency board also has the authority to give them an increase in expenditure limitation if they have any need for that. And so it would really just be proposed budget notes for reporting mechanisms, basically. If something changes in the meantime that they need a budget adjustment for, that they would have to come back and report on that.
Thank you. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Rocker, just briefly, are you comfortable, and it's still in, and there's Laurie right there, the segregated funds, that's still in place so we can account for these funds separately? I know that was a key issue that you wanted to do, and most of us wanted to make sure that happened. I know Mr. Allen wasn't overly thrilled with that, but that's still in place?
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, I believe it is, yes. I haven't checked for sure, but I think it, from what I've seen, it was not changed in the dash one.
A follow-up question? Mm-hmm. And the other item, I think just specifically, you talked about the regular ways and means process and e-board. An example that may in fact be, you know, the potential of a future IT project that might be built out for the shop or something that's something different, which got us in the hot water we were now. That sort of thing, that they would have to come back to you to get expenditure authority, not to you, but to the e-board, so we would have regulatory oversight of that through the legislature.
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, yes, and I think we would also be looking over those IT kinds of projects that they would be initiating, because we do have an oversight responsibility for IT projects now, too. So on both the IT side and on the expenditure limitation side, there would be that review process that went in place.
Thank you, Madam Kirchner.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now I'd like to see if there's anybody that signed up to testify.
With a 10-foot pole.
Tickets were sold to the Titanic and they stopped someone last week, Doc.
What, Sandy?
It's blank.
It's blank. Thank you, public. Madam Chair, we're supposed to encourage Oregonians to testify.
Madam Kosher, this is the part of the shotgun wedding where you either protest or don't protest.
That's right. All right, well, no further discussion. I think we're at the end, right,
Madam
Sandy?
Chair, can a sense of what's going to happen next? We'll get a physical from LFO next week.
Yes.
Once we have that in hand, are we ready to move the bill?
It's my impression that we'll adopt the dash one amendments on Monday and then work the bill if the fiscal works out all right. I see no reason why we can't.
There's the Monday agenda.
And do we know which committee it's going to be sent to in Ways and Means?
It's not going to Ways and Means.
We have Ways and Means Authority, mm-hmm. We were told last time. I don't think you were here when we
found
that
out. Yeah, you weren't here
okay.
when we talked about
it.
It's going right to the floor of the Senate.
Right straight to the floor.
Just a point of clarification, Madam Co-Chair. And I think if I heard right, Rocco's somewhere out there, right? He's hiding.
Oh, he left.
He left. Okay, he's hiding. But I think, as was made mention, this whole budgeting process is going to be in the existing ways, which just he just said was going to be in the Ways and Means process. So even though we adopt this and it's
the
not...
The DCBS
going,
budget will
right,
be...
Right. This will be folded into the DCBS budget and be part of the Ways and Means process downstairs, too. I think that's correct.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And in addition to the regular review, they intended to have a budget note requiring any change in the IT side.
Senator, Madam Kutcher, to follow up on your question, we're going to see the fiscal to the dash one when it arrives, is that correct? So we're talking about moving the bill out of committee Monday? Is that correct?
That's my impression. As long as we have
the fiscal.
Right.
As long as we have the fiscal.
Yeah, okay, right. if they can get it done that quickly.
They're planning on having it for us by Monday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
On Monday night.
And which floor does it go to first?
Does it go to the House or the Senate first?
Should be pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
If I get a copy, I'd love to, but it should be pretty straightforward.
Okay. All right. All right, everyone. We are adjourned. All right, everyone, we are adjourned.